Welcome to episode 65 of Industry Misinterpretations with James Robertson, Michael Lucas Smith, and David Buck. This is part two of our two-part episode with Stephen Travis Pope. We spoke to him a few weeks ago. In this part of the conversation, we mostly focused on the UI of SynCom Smalltalk and where it's been, where it should go, and where Smalltalk ought to go in the future. Hope you enjoy this episode. In the meantime, if you have feedback, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com or head on over to the Facebook group, Industry Misinterpretations, or head on over to iTunes and leave a review, or Podcast Alley and cast a vote.
Darling, I gotta talk to you about the things you've been putting me through now. I gotta talk to you, I gotta be explained to you.
So Travis, Stephen, sorry.
Travis.
Stephen, that's my middle name. It works.
Stephen, I was thinking you're talking about the future of small talk and where you think it should go. Besides the multiple inheritance we've talked about, where else do you think small talk needs to evolve?
Get rid of source code. That's what I say. Actually, I'm serious. I would.
I've heard that rant before. Let me hear Stephen's rant though.
Well, the two reasons I would say that's not a good idea is, first of all, not just comments and variable names, but arbitrary indentation. That I really don't like formatters and decompilers because I just have idiosyncratic indenting rules.
You can save that.
Then at some point it becomes easier and simpler to save the source code, right? If you're putting all that annotation into the method. No, what I was just looking at the last couple of days in preparation for this was thinking about what James and I had talked about a few weeks ago and what you guys had talked about in the podcast earlier about sort of the demise of Pollock. I was thinking about, well, what would, you know, in order for the VisualWorks community to really commit to Wrapper and really, you know, fix what's wrong with it rather than throwing it out, you know, having been at least one of their progenitors. And I guess I started talking with James about it before, but the history of Wrapper was largely that there were sort of three different projects going on at Park at the same time of people trying to build new structured graphics frameworks or new GUI frameworks or GUI tools. And the one that ended up being called VisualWorks was sort of the third of three, that Peter Deutsch was working on a system called Viewers, and that was what was supposed to be in the product path. And for various reasons ended up just being impractical because it was so big. And then David Leibs and I were doing all these different projects for consulting clients that Adele had only gotten permission for us to do by saying these were not to be in the core product path. But going before that, David and I had both done different systems. His was called The Delusion of Maya, which I always loved the name. And mine was just called The New World. But we had both sort of re-implemented all of MVC using our own ideas, but that is partially still reflected in Wrapper, or what is currently called Wrapper, because of this nasty naming, that there are some things that are sort of, there are different design patterns conflicting with one another in the system. And you see it in the naming, that I called things adapters and like this idea of wrappers and what we would later learn was all called the facade pattern and adapter patterns. And David came from the idea of everything being values and what had earlier been called dynamic value frameworks. So I think the first thing about Wrapper is that changing the name of Wrapper, first of all, calling it something spiffy. I hear the name Widgetry has recently become available.
That would get awfully confusing.
But just going through and kind of consistently figuring out what design patterns are being used at different places, and whether we call everything adapters or everything wrappers or everything values, in my own code, I tend to use adapter pattern a lot and like this idea of wrapper or API translator. But the value model and value holders is also a very nice design pattern. The second thing in wrapper that I think would be interesting would be, to get back on my rant from before, would be using species for things like border decorators or for things like even composite part, of saying your species has to do with preferred bounds and component holding and certain things you delegate through your species class, but then the notion of just having a container, having handlers registered sort of what we call visual part could be your primary inheritance tree. But somehow, I think it could be much simpler than it is. And it was just at the time in 87 or 88, whenever all that was done, I guess before 89, I think most of it was done by early 89. We just never went back and really cleaned it carefully and fixed the naming and, you know, kind of had the war that David and I had been having in little skirmishes, but never resolved about use of design patterns and naming.
So it's all your fault?
No, most of it is David's fault, actually.
Okay. So.
Well, as I said, when we were doing it, it was just fun, and we were just doing it for a consulting project that was a proof of concept project. So it was obviously never going to be, you know, the source code was never going to see the light of day. And the idea was to build this replacement for the analyst, that there had been this earlier analyst system, and the customer of the analyst wanted to see what would the next generation of that look like. So we were building a proof of concept. So the assumption was nobody will ever see the source code. Nobody will have to reuse this stuff. So we didn't have to normalize the names. But I mean, looking at Wrapper, I think it's good. It works. It's not hugely bloated. I mean, it's kind of bloated, but not hugely bloated. I think if you took out the refactoring browser and the lens tools and all of that stuff, the core would be actually a pretty tight, you know, compact GUI framework for what it does. I mean, if you compare it to Qt or Juice or any other language's sophisticated cross-platform look and feel independent GUI framework, it's actually still kind of compact.
I'm pretty sure that some of the levels in Wrapper could be compressed down, though. I mean, do you always have to have some sort of bounding wrapper on top of an object? An object should know, or a widget should know how to lay itself out, or it should have a part, a behavior for it.
Well, that's what I was trying to say before, that you could collapse the four or five high-level classes of, you know, visual component, visual part, component part, dependent composite. You only need two or three there. You don't need five or six. So saying everything is a model, everything can be composite pattern. So visual component could absorb a dependent composite and visual part right there. Just to say, for the purposes of this framework, everything is a container and everything is a model. I think that would be fair.
I did that in my subclasses of various things in Wrapper. You know, there's actually debate around whether you should just... So in the web world, which is, you know, I've done lots of GUI programming in lots of different GUI environments, and of recent I've been doing a lot in the web world. And in the web world, you have element and it has children, and an element is some sort of graphical node drawn on the screen with its CSS properties. So you just get rid of this whole concept of should I have children or shouldn't I have children? Just everything has children. And that's incredibly convenient, and especially when you come across some widget that you want to add some button on the edge of it or something like that, and you just want to add a child to it and have it work. So, but there's still plenty of debate going around as to whether you have that or you have a three-root structure of no children, one child, or many children. And for me, I just couldn't be bothered having to make that decision. Let the programmer who's using my widget decide whether they want one child in it, many child in it, or no children in it. So, I mean, I don't have a problem with anything you're saying there. All of that stuff can be done on Wrapper right now, which is one of the reasons why I like Wrapper. The biggest problem in Wrapper is actually two things: the inertia of objects that actually depend on each other. So you've got like the input field, which must be inside a scrolling wrapper, which must be inside a bounded wrapper, so on and so forth. It must be laid out in that particular format of objects, otherwise it won't work. So those objects are clearly very dependent and shouldn't be, you know, separated out like that. And the other problem is obviously the UI builder. The UI specs that you create from a UI builder should have been wrapper widgets. They shouldn't have been a builder pattern.
Yeah, but the idea of having the specs stored in this purely declarative format means that if you did decide to completely redefine some important things about where input fields live, the parser that goes through, the builder would only be the only thing that has to know.
Yeah, except so
you,
those purely
change the underlying framework separate from the tools, and you could then migrate the tools slowly or whatever. I mean, the idea, and that's something that I have to give David Leibs credit for, that the idea that, no, let's store it in a purely declarative format as this nasty array list format, but that means that
nasty ArrayList format directly references real class names and uses properties that are mapped onto those real class names. So,
and that's one of the problems.
The builder interprets it that way. Those are simple.
So
those aren't
having
class
specs
names.
Does not mean you don't. If you got rid of specs and turn them into real widgets, that doesn't mean you get rid of the independent declarative format for UIs, right?
Oh, okay. Then I misunderstood you.
Right. What you want is to be able to say, I'm going to add a widget to my tree and set up its properties just like I would have if I'd done it from the spec. Mm. But there's no widget that you can do that within Wrapper. What you have to do is, if you look at the UI builder code, UI policy code, it interprets the stuff from the spec and goes through and builds up the structure of wrappers and sets properties in all manner of strange ways. And
that's just because nobody has ever gone through and built a smarter builder, because you haven't, mucked with and completely redefined the underlying widget framework. The idea of builder was builder will evolve as the widget framework evolves, and the old builder will just be there to interpret old specs, and new specs will need the simple builder.
The problem is every developer who's come along afterwards has lived in utter fear of the builder.
Really not that nasty. Okay, send me one. I'll fix them.
It's not that bad. So what I did in UI, which I'm getting close to being satisfied with it and actually bothering to write comments for it, was to take each of the specs and turn them into widgets. And that means that they work just like the specs did. You still have your own actual array spec to define things. But it means that the builder code has finally evolved into something more useful. I think it's been a good experiment to try it out and see if it works, and hopefully something like this will end up in the product soon. Because there is, when you get down to the core of Wrapper, the very core ideas inside Wrapper, or some better name for it, model-driven UIs. There you go, model UI. It's okay. It's pretty good. It works reasonably well. And the decorator pattern is fine, but it's just majorly overused in the model UI framework.
It doesn't always have to imply another layer of hierarchy and another layer of inheritance. So either at runtime, you don't need every decorator to be a real another wrapper. It could be something you delegate to. It could be something that is your species. There are many different ways to resolve that other than having things that are 50 layers deep as you drill down to get to an actual widget. Everybody who's ever debugged that has cussed the layers of wrappers. And then to name the thing wrapper was just the ultimate insult. That's adding insult to injury.
That's done afterward.
That name came afterwards. Actually, if you want to know where that came from, that name...
I know the name came afterwards. I was there at the origin.
Yeah, no, but I can tell you where the name comes from, I think, is the name came when the Pollock project started. And it was kind of a dismissive name assigned to it as, we'll call the old stuff this. And that's really where it came from. It was a way of dismissing it.
Insult taken. Okay. So the other thing that I mean, if we could get back to the future, one thing that James and I talked about a little bit
weeks
ago.
Sorry.
Pardon?
Where's Doc Brown? Back to the future.
Yeah, there we go. Well, I work a lot with C++ and Smalltalk and scripting languages and building big apps either alone or with students and using interface compilers or things like Swig and in Squeak Slang. And I think in terms of the future of Smalltalk, making it much easier to have a Smalltalk component that you wrap onto something else, or write a Smalltalk backend that you call from Python or Ruby, or vice versa, have a Smalltalk GUI that talks out its backend to C++ or Java.
Did you listen to the podcast that we did? Was that last week that we discussed what?
We haven't released that one yet.
Okay. Well, obviously you haven't listened to that one yet, because
we haven't released it. Second podcast now where we've talked about stuff that hasn't come out yet. So this one will come out the week after the one that we're talking about will come out.
Well, I blame Michael for all this because he's the time prattler here.
Well, I try to help, but you just don't listen.
Well, in that case, I can say anything. It's like, you guys were so off the mark on that. Really, you missed the boat entirely.
Yeah.
Well, Dave, why don't you give the summation of what you've been working on just briefly, since we did a whole podcast on it, so that you can fill Stephen in on what he will listen to after we release the thing.
Boy, this is getting confusing. What we have is now the ability for other languages like C, C++, and anything that can call DLLs to call Smalltalk as a DLL. And so it can actually launch the Smalltalk image and have Smalltalk start running and call into it and get it to do certain, basically any Smalltalk message it wishes.
I'd like to add on to this as well. Same podcast, which, you know, we're just repeating it for anybody who's just listened to it next week / last week. We talked a lot about how Smalltalk can then interface with other languages better. And I'd written an x86 assembler for VisualWorks, and LLVM and C-Lang and stuff like that that Anthony Blakey's working on is starting to work. In fact, today he – just an update on that. Today he told me that the just-in-time C compiler in C-Lang with LLVM works from VisualWorks now. So he can write some C code in a Smalltalk method and have LLVM JIT it and run it.
For that kind of interoperability with C, one of the things you probably ought to look at is Anthony Blakey's blog. It's on our server. If you go to syncomsmalltalk.com/user/blogs, his blog is listed there. He talks extensively about this subject specifically.
Okay, well, that's wonderful. Just remember from our podcast a couple weeks before, which actually has come out, James, or was that just a private thing you sent me? I'm not sure.
That's come out.
One of my problems with DLLCC and with callbacks has always been, to do audio, I need to be able to do this every millisecond. So, you know, if you're streaming audio...
In that case, you really do want to look at the LLVM stuff, because it will compile and JIT something that's optimized for the arguments you're passing through.
Just one of the problems I've had in Siren is that I can't really do any non-trivial audio synthesis in Siren, just because I haven't found a mechanism where if I have a thread running in C++ streaming the audio out, like if I make a Jack client or just any interface to port audio or to DirectX that has to get audio buffers, it seemed like all of these solutions using DLLCC, whether it's handing a semaphore down to C code, handing a message send down to C code, triggering semaphores, any of those different policies, and when I tried them all, none of them worked fast enough to do audio streaming.
But just remember, I mean, just recently Apple has deprecated the C interfaces to their APIs. However, they kept one API in there that's really kind of telling them with respect to this sort of kind of streaming, etc. Event handling is still a C API, not an Objective C call. And the reason for that is simply the throughput, the speed, you know. And in Object Studio, when they're ported to VisualWorks, they have the event handler in C code as well. And what it does is it filters in the stuff that matters and pushes that up to Smalltalk. So when you've got something that is very, you know, intensive like that, maybe the LLVM just-in-time compiler is a way to make it run fast, but I don't have enough experience with that. But this sort of area, you know, really, you really want to get down to the metal. I guess, you know, there's not too many things you can do to work around that.
No, that's why we, in the Siren world, we just don't do audio in Smalltalk anymore. We control, the new system creates networks of signal processing objects, but the objects themselves are C++ objects. And then you start a thread that is actually doing callbacks just into this sort of parallel signal processing graph that Smalltalk created, but that is all C++ code. So Smalltalk is doing parameter updates to this graph, but the graph itself is all outside objects created on the heap whose methods are C++.
And that's the same thing you do with OpenGL as well. What you do is you get OpenGL to do all the float array transformations and all that sort of stuff, and you tell it what you want it to. So when I wrapped up OpenGL with David Price years ago, we made a simple framework that sent commands to build up the tree, but then you go render and OpenGL does all the actual heavy work to make that happen.
That sounds pretty much exactly like what, Dave, you did with Elastolab years ago too, right?
I had a C library that did all the heavy calculations and called it from Smalltalk.
And but then again, if you're an x86, you can now do those heavy calculations just straight in assembler.
The problem with us is just for audio, you have developers who want to write their own unit generators, right? Their own signal processing code, and to tell them, oh yeah, that you do in C++, and then you compile it, and then you rerun Swig to generate the glue code, and then you go back into Smalltalk and reload the Swig stuff. It's just the bad old world.
Yeah, somewhere between all those steps, their eyes glazed over.
Well, but the argument is, in the world of digital audio, there is no language that has the performance of low-level code and the kind of tools and GUIs and flexibility and rapid turnaround environment of scripting languages. And actually, just a couple months ago at this year's Computer Music Conference, I gave a talk on this notion of merging scripting languages and real languages. And the example was the stuff we're doing where the top-level language is all Smalltalk, and you have the Smalltalk tools and the rapid turnaround environment, but under the hood, the DSP graphs are being executed by C++ code.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still hard, and people in Ruby and Python and Lua and all those languages have the same problems.
Well, Lua's built for that. Lua's built around the idea of being in some sort of high-performance environment and having that environment ask Lua to do some sort of transform or change. And, you know, they put it in games a lot.
Yeah.
Although it's being replaced with Python, I think. So.
Well, those are all great languages for 100-line programs. And if you then start talking about 10,000-line programs, none of them scale. None of them have the tools. None of them have the libraries. So
yeah,
you're back to the same old problem.
Yeah, that's pretty much where the industry is stuck right now.
So what is your guys' take on the current state of Squeak? When I keep hearing that Croquet is doing well and people are doing new things, and you know, every few months or at least twice a year, I download the current Squeak and look at it, and it comes up, and my first response is, "Oh, this is still a toy." But
well, I have to say it's kind of the same for me. When you fire up Squeak, you know, you fire up VisualWorks and you have a momentary what now problem. You fire up Squeak, and you've got a what the now problem.
now you see. Now I have to actually edit something.
Oh, you can put a beep in. Or you can, you know, no one will understand my accent anyway. It doesn't really matter. But
that was Australian for beer.
Yes. Yeah. Not Foster's. So that's Squeak.
If you think the pull right menus in the refactoring browser are confusing, all you need to do is pull up any arbitrary menu in Squeak and be utterly befuddled.
One of those things that has immense potential, but it's like it hasn't got that kickstart yet where people are actually using it full time. They don't have a lobby. You know, when you download Croquet and say start Croquet, you shouldn't be thrown into a Squeak environment. You'd be connected straight to a lobby where you can meet other people and share your space and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Now, having said that, there are some parts of Squeak that are coming along better than others. I mean, for instance, the Seaside stuff is coming along very well, but I think the difference is the Squeak environment as a whole doesn't seem to have, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to me that Squeak as a whole doesn't have any disciplined development leadership going on for Squeak.
Seaside does.
Okay, Squeak does not. Seaside does. The Seaside development team seems to be very tight and very disciplined. So you see the Squeak guys who are working on Seaside, they're pushing stuff out in a very disciplined and tight fashion and doing a very good job. But Squeak itself doesn't seem to have that.
Hmm. Is Linus Torvalds entertaining new propositions, you think? Or?
The Floss guys seem to be interested in Squeak. I listened to the podcast, and Leo Laporte was just amazed by it. He wants to go away and play with it.
Yeah, Smalltalk is amazing. I mean, I know this is a Smalltalk podcast, but when we step back and think about all of the things we take for granted, mm-hmm. just demoing the debugger to someone or the inspector and changing the values of an object while the program's running, changing the code while the program's running, showing 3D morph synced with lip synced with audio, all written in Smalltalk code, rendered in Squeak, that sort of stuff. You know, it's all amazing. It's easy to forget that.
I was doing a demo last week of somebody asked about Smalltalk, and I said, well, here, let me show you my spider solitaire game. And while it's running, I'll take this stack and, oh, look, the top card is hidden. It's flipped its face down, but it's a five of spades. I want that on the bottom, so let me remove it from the top of the stack, push it to the bottom, flip it right side up, refresh the screen, and suddenly my card appears and I can keep playing. It's a nice way of cheating.
Yeah, I wowed a friend like that when I was making my little spaceship game, which, you know, is going to be an eternal work in progress. And I had my little spaceship flying around in space, and I was lost. I didn't know where I was anymore. So I brought up an inspector as he walked in, and I said, oh, yeah, I'm about to teleport my spaceship by writing some code. And so the spaceship's flying along, stars whizzing by. I set my momentum back to zero and set my coordinates back to zero, and boom, I was back to the center of the universe again. And he thought that was really cool.
Well, so certainly, Stephen, you have this impression with the students you work with. You have people who are working with both C++ and with Smalltalk. So what kind of reaction do people that you're dealing with have between moving between those environments?
It's, for me, it's disappointing because I always say, gee, can we get jobs if you teach us Smalltalk? And I say, well, probably not. Our program, I work largely with master's students in a professional master's degree program. And I just feel kind of the, conscience pressure to actually teach them stuff that they could go out and use in Hollywood or Silicon Valley, because that's where they go. We have students at places like Warner New Media and Sony Development, or they go up to the Bay Area and work for DigiDesign or Creative Labs or Sennheiser. All those jobs are C++. So I give them Smalltalk demos, and I basically tell them, I hope that during your careers, you have better languages and better tools. That was a Smalltalk demo. Now let's go back to Xcode and Visual Studio.
I often hear Smalltalk people, when asked, what's Smalltalk like, to basically say, well, don't learn Smalltalk because it'll just spoil you for the rest of your career. You'll never be happy programming again.
I show it to the students and say, I want to make whiners out of you so that you'll go to the tool makers, of the tools you work with and say, why is this so hard? Like you were saying before, why do I have to quit the program? Why don't I have an inspector where I can go in with a wire wrap tool and change stuff? And, gradually they're learning a little bit. They're fixing continue in some, at least in Xcode, in C++, it works in some cases.
Yeah, although to put this back on a positive spin, the fact, Dave mentioned the Floss podcast where they were talking about Squeak. And if you listen to that podcast, both Leo Laporte and Randall Schwartz were extremely enthusiastic about Seaside. So I think there's another cusp point with Seaside where a group of web developers, if exposed to Seaside, can actually see a better way of doing things. I mean, a lot of these people are entranced by Ruby and Ruby on Rails and some of the equivalent Python frameworks. And I know that if you take a Ruby developer and show them doing fix and continue with a web, with the web browser running and just continuing your web app as if nothing happened, that does make jaws drop. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to drop everything and use Seaside tomorrow, but it does impress on them that there are other things out there that are in fact better than what they think is really cool.
Well, that gets back to something you were just saying about, all right, so if some of those people heard that Squeak was cool and they downloaded it and they fire it up and they get the what the bleep experience, how could we fix this? And one of my feelings has always been, could we make a browser that showed you a safe subset of the system of here's what you want as a beginner. You want to see magnitudes, you want to see some graphics, you don't want to see the compiler, you don't want to see, all of the streams. How would we make tools for somebody who was expecting something like Ruby or Python? What browser would they get when they fire up the image?
It's good you ask. That's exactly what we're kind of working on with Web Velocity, but perhaps that's a different podcast.
Is that one we've heard or not heard?
Not recorded yet.
It's one we haven't heard yet, but we're bringing Seaside into Syncom Smalltalk as a supported product, and
we announced. Congratulations! That's wonderful.
Yeah, and we're taking our cue in terms of development from the open source community and pushing stuff back to them. So we're not trying to hijack the project or do anything like that. But the thing is, we're trying to do value add at the tool level, at the developer level, at the make things a little easier level. But having said that, even the Squeak guys recognize that's something of a problem. I was doing benchmarking recently, and the easiest way for me to get Seaside and Squeak to do tests against it was that they have created what they call a Seaside single-click experience image, which it's still Squeak. The image is still that big garish colors thing. But you download it, and you bring up a browser, and you go to the right URL, and you're just running Seaside, and it's right there already. So even there, the Seaside guys have recognized that if they want people to look at it, they have to package it up in a way that you can just hit the browser and start going through some of the tutorials, like the one for the University of Potsdam, and just get things running. And that's really what we're trying to do over here as well on our side in Syncom Smalltalk, is put together some easy demos and tutorials so that you can just download it and get started.
That's exciting.
And I'm hoping that a lot of that work will actually spill back into regular Smalltalk too.
Exactly.
And we'll get, you know, the advantages there, and it'll, the movement will continue on from there and strengthen the product. But early days.
Yep. And in the meantime, we're just trying to do our part, you know, with these things like this podcast. And I put out the Smalltalk Daily screencast, and I do videos every so often. And, you know, we're trying to get that kind of easy to access material out there. So it's like Michael said, it's early days and it's a small start. And you could argue we should have done a lot of this stuff years ago, but, you know, got to start somewhere.
No, I wasn't trying to be demeaning. I was just asking the questions. And I know that having your screencasts out where people can pull up a demo is certainly very good for the whole community.
Yeah, and actually, if I understand it, those screencasts are referenced in the front page of the new browser now, aren't they, Michael?
Yes, they are. You open up VisualWorks 7.6, open up the system browser, which is an extra step that I don't think we should have. I don't like having the launcher there anymore. I've decided that that's definitely something from the 90s that should disappear. But
Is there a transcript? Is there a transcript?
Yes, the transcript is still attached to the launcher, just like it always has been.
I want to get rid of that kind of concept. No, I don't actually want to get rid of the transcript or workspaces or anything like that. I want to get rid of having the launcher open up. I'd rather they open up into a running environment where they can do work. But anyway, that's a conversation for another time, I guess. So you open up the refactoring browser, and the comment tab is open immediately on the image, and it references all the screencasts, PDFs, etc.
Yeah, and there are actually URLs you can click on for once.
Oh, yeah, you can click on URLs in the comments now.
Wonderful.
That's something we did early on.
Well, I'll have to get back on the VWNC dev list, so I start reading all that stuff.
Well, you can play with Seaside then, too.
Yeah, I have to admit that I'm even on the VWNC list, and I'm looking now, and there are 4,615 messages that I haven't read.
Fairly active community.
Nobody seems to have taken up my flame about species, though.
No, not yet. We can try to make that happen with these podcasts, but no, not yet.
It wasn't a very good movie, though, I have to say, Steve. You know, Species 2.
Well, I think if we're referencing that movie, we've reached the end of the podcast.
Silliness abound.
Yeah, so I want to thank you, Stephen, for coming on again.
Well, this was fun.
It was. I enjoyed that.
Thank you guys for staying up whatever unreasonable times of night it is where you are.
It's about 1 o'clock in the morning.
It's a weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Well, great. So this will be out then sometime in February or so, or
yeah, something like that. I'll have to consult Michael because he's the time traveler. He's the expert on when these things will appear. He tries to explain it to me, and I never quite get it.
Well, James, I should say again, thank you for doing this. I don't always read the mailing list, but my iTunes downloads the podcast every week.
But now you know how it's done. You know, all the magic's just gone.
Yeah, you don't want to watch the sausage being made too closely.
Yeah, that and laws, right, is where the...
There you go. All right, well, thanks, guys.
Very good.
Yeah, thank you.
See you next
time. Have a great evening. Good to talk to you all.
All right, bye.
Good to talk to you.
Bye.
And next up is David Buck with this week's Cimbron Design Minute.
This is David Buck with today's Cimbron Design Minute. One important thing we are trying to achieve in object-oriented design is the separation of variability. What I mean by this is that the things that vary in different ways should be put into different objects. If you have an object that has some variables that change once a second and others that change once a month, you probably have a very low cohesion and should split the object into two. If one class has variables and methods specific to an operating system and other variables and methods specific to a database, then again you have low cohesion. You'll find yourself creating similar classes that target other operating systems and other databases. Instead, split the object up into operating system specific parts and database specific parts. In general, when you see aspects of your design that vary in different ways, break them apart into separate objects that encompass that variation. You'll find that your general objects will become more general, and the system becomes more flexible as a result. This has been the Cimbron Design Minute. Cimbron offers training and consulting in object-oriented development and the Smalltalk programming language. For more information, visit www.cimbron.com or email info@cimbron.com.
Here's James Savage with this week's Smalltalk Jobs Report.
I'm James T. Savage, and this is the Smalltalk Jobs Report. Melbourne, Australia. Command Recruitment Group is looking for multiple application migration technical leads who have experience with Apache, Microsoft Windows Server, Oracle, Smalltalk, Solaris, technical documentation, and web development. These are six-month contract positions. Bruce O'Neill, our contributor in the EU, reports that in Rotterdam, Netherlands, Anorexis Recruitment Services has multiple positions open for people who have experience with Ruby on Rails, Smalltalk, and J2EE. These permanent positions will pay $50,000 plus per year. Dusseldorf, Germany. On the Squeak mailing list, Klaus Witzel stated that he has a permanent position available for someone who has experience with Seaside, J2EE, SQL, and Tomcat. Web development is considered a plus. Back in the U.S., San Francisco, California, Archimedes is again looking for an associate scientist. They are looking for someone who has a bachelor or master's degree in mathematics or computer science, has experience with researching medical issues, can work in a team environment, and has experience with Smalltalk and Java. Experience that is considered a plus includes scripting experience, source code management, startup experience, system testing, and XML exposure. North America. Syncom says they are looking for someone with a background in web technologies such as Ajax development, JavaScript development, including knowledge of Prototype and Scriptalicious, Web 2.0 design, knowledge of CSS, graphic design skills, the Seaside framework, experience with major databases such as Oracle, SQL Server, DB2, MySQL, and Postgres, web database interaction, especially with the Active Record pattern, RESTful API design. Experience with newer technologies like Microsoft Silverlight and Adobe Air and Ruby on Rails would be helpful but not required. Knowledge of Glorp would be helpful as well. Disgruntled Rails developers are welcome to apply. No news on whether or not disgruntled Java programmers need apply. These are just a few examples of the Smalltalk positions that are currently open across the world. For more details, visit my blog, Message Sends with an Undefined Object. Good luck with your job hunting.
And that about wraps up Industry Misinterpretations for this week. Next week and the week after, we have a two-part conversation with Craig Lotta where we talked about Spoon and his work in making Smalltalk smaller. In the meantime, if you have feedback, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com, head on over to the Industry Misinterpretations group on Facebook, or head on over to iTunes and leave a review, or Podcast Alley and cast a vote. Until then, have fun with Smalltalk.
I gotta be explained to you.